Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, quietly scrambling to fix the problem. Well, Manton, you, as we discussed previously on the show, are going to San Francisco for the week of WWDC. Sort of a major part of the structure of your week was going to be speaking at CocoConf Alt and presumably attending.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the rug kind of got pulled out from under you, under the CocoConf organizers, and under all of the people who had already purchased a ticket for that conference.
Yep. They announced last week that it's not going to happen after all. The hotel apparently had some kind of contract with Apple and didn't want competing conferences. It's hard to tell exactly how things were worded or how it went wrong, but basically, it's not going to happen after all. And so it's disappointing. I think that the alternate conferences are a great idea. The alt WWDC is still going to happen. But, you know, I'm at that point, things are already set in motion. I was already going to be there. I already had plans to do other things there. So I'm still going to be there, just without the extra conference part.
Right. And I guess, like, for you, it's a little bit less disruptive because as a speaker at the conference, you hadn't actually paid for a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that's not a big... It's no different, really. I mean, they're going to refund the money. Actually, the organizer, Dave Klein, said that they are refunding the purchase price and offering people who had put, you know, put their faith in the conference, they're offering them a free ticket to a future CocoConf.
Oh, awesome. That's great. Yeah. And they also at the same time announced several dates for the fall. I think Portland is one of those and a couple others. So that's great. I had actually missed that part of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're trying to make it right. And yeah, the other side of it is, you know, I would have loved to speak there and I would have loved to attend, but yeah, also there's the extra preparing for the talk. And I mean, so it's kind of a trade-off, I think, for me, not having the extra time to prepare and give a talk and stress about it before WWDC is actually going to be fine, not having to deal with that.
But you are still planning on going out.
Yeah,
absolutely. This doesn't take away all the bait for luring Manton Reese out to California.
No. Like I said, at that point, I was already set on this path, so I'm definitely going to be there anyway. And the other funny part is, as we've talked about, there was two alternate conferences, and there's a bunch of other events that are kind of going on, but there's Alt WWDC, and then there was CocoConf Alt, which is not happening anymore. I didn't sign up. I was on the mailing list for the Alt WWDC, but I didn't actually sign up for a ticket because I didn't think that I would be there very much because I had the commitment to CocoConf and I had other things I wanted to do. And so I didn't want to like take up a seat. I know they have limited space, so I didn't sign up for it. And then of course now
you got nothing to do.
Now without the CocoConf one, I was like, now I'll have extra time. I could do some of the alt WWDC ones, but of course it's too late. So I'm on the wait list for that. So I'm fine with that. I mean, I didn't want to overbook myself and I definitely didn't want to take up a space that someone else could use. So, hopefully there'll be a chance to go over there at some point, but if not, bam, that's life.
You just got
to
start your own little splinter conference, Manton Conf.
Yeah.
Alt Manton 2013. San Francisco's hottest conference is...
No, I mean, I have stuff I want to do there anyway. There's events in the evening. There's also the app.net hackathon that I mentioned that I really wanted to attend. And also, I'm actually looking forward to hiding away for a few hours every morning and getting some work done. I have a lot to do, and I'm going to take this opportunity to actually get some work done as well.
Great. Well, I will see you there, of course. And hopefully we'll see a bunch of our listeners out for WWDC. I'm sure we'll be hitting on this topic again in the coming weeks preceding WWDC, but I guess we shouldn't beat it to death, but it was just kind of, I guess that CocoConf thing really bummed me out because I feel like that was the direction. Conferences like CocoConf and the Alt WWDC, I saw those and actually still see them as part of the solution to the greater WWDC problem, which is WWDC, the official conference, can remain the sort of kernel of this week of of unrivaled Apple-centric nerd aggregation, right? But having these external events, it only helps like drive the hype of the whole thing up and makes Apple look that much more influential, in my opinion. It's like, so big that they have to have multiple conferences in the space of 1 week in one city taking over. You could see it growing to the point where it would essentially take over the whole like South of Market area in San Francisco.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave at CocoConf made a big deal about how, let's not draw conclusions. It wasn't Apple being evil, canceling their event or something like that. But I do think that it's in Apple's best interest to actively encourage these other conferences, not just say it's okay or just kind of let it happen, but actually actively say, this is great. And I think you even mentioned, they should send an engineer over there to talk to people or, whatever. Just do everything they can to make that part of the week strong, because it helps the community and it also relieves pressure on the main conference. When this stuff first started happening, someone mentioned, maybe the alt conferences at some point will grow to be as big as the main conference. And I think we're far away from that, especially now that the CocoConf isn't happening. It probably would have just been hundreds anyway, not 1,000 people.
Right.
But yeah, even hundreds of people, you could easily see growing to 1,000 people, which is a sizable, number of folks around the main conference.
And it's something that Apple can leverage without having to invest much of their own money or their staff. And that's kind of like a gimme sort of for Apple to be able to say, this is all happening. People are self-organizing themselves around our brand. And all we have to do is kind of like throw them a bone every once in a while.
Yeah, very little investment on their part. And part of the problem Apple has is they're so secretive, and they're so dependent. They're so used to waiting for leadership from the very top of the company. We don't want to do anything until we know what Steve is going to do. Of course, now Steve's not there, but that attitude is still there. We're waiting for leadership from the very top. I feel like there's a bunch of people at Apple that could make a difference that are kind of in the middle, that maybe don't know what to do. And of course, they're also slammed and busy just as it is with WWDC. But I feel like there could be a really positive impact if some people at Apple said, we're going to take a leadership role in this. We're not going to wait until Tim Cook says, this is what we should do.
Right.
We're going to reach out to the community and make a difference. And that's a complaint I've kind of always had with Apple. They seem unwilling to do that. So there are probably a lot of people at Apple that saw this CocoConf thing play out, and they didn't say anything, and they didn't do anything.
Well, and there are some small things along those lines that Apple has been doing, not with great fanfare, but, Apple has sent some of their employees to smaller conferences, that sends us a really strong message. It takes very little on Apple's part to sort of give a blessing, an implicit blessing to an external event and sort of saying like, we value this is useful. And of course, by visiting and in particular, like developer relations folks visiting these conferences, it's just a convenient, third parties have conveniently grouped together a perfect, forum of people to give valuable feedback to developer relations at Apple. So obviously at WWDC, Apple's accumulated their own group of valuable feedback givers, but I don't know. I don't want to trivialize the problem, the problems Apple has with managing WWDC and the size of it and the overcrowding. Sure. But, I think they could probably afford to at least give some kind of positive lip service to the third-party events going on at the same week.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And the good news, we found out this week, though, that WWDC tickets are still on sale. They're still being made available. So
did you pick one up, Manton? Your time is running out. I'm sure they're going to sell out soon.
Right. No, I know people that seem to be picking them up this week, but I haven't... I've been waiting. I've been dragging my feet.
Getting
a ticket.
It's kind of hard to explain this, and I quipped about it on Twitter. I said something like that, like, you know, do you think WWDC will sell out soon or something?
Right.
And it was just sort of a commentary on this. Yes. And most people who aren't like chatting with lots of different people all the time in the developer world or didn't get the joke because they thought, well, what are you talking about? And they sold out 2 minutes in. And of course, everybody knows they didn't literally sell out 2 minutes in because Apple was calling people up for the next 2 days.
Yep.
Who had, you know, problems with the checkout, and the Apple had somehow detected that and was able to get in touch with them. And then that's okay. So maybe it didn't take 2 minutes. Maybe it actually literally, you know, if you look at it literally, maybe it took 2 days. But then two weeks later, seems like people are still getting calls.
Yep.
Right? And I've heard it said that who knows what the story is there. And
Well, who knows what the story is, but there's some things we do know. Hundreds of people, I think it's fair to say, have gotten tickets after it sold out.
Yes.
And we know of many of them, which means we know there must be a lot more we don't know about. So I mean, we're definitely jumping to conclusions, and we don't want to put blame or, you know, craziness where it's not. But I think it is clear that something really bad happened when the tickets went on sale, and there were a lot of tickets that were not actually sold.
Right.
And now, I mean, Apple, you know, no matter what Apple does, it looks bad. So they're trying to quietly fix the problem by getting people...
Right.
Who want to go and who missed their chance, definitely deserve to go, tried to go, had shopping cart problems, whatever. Trying to get those people tickets. It looks bad either way, but it getting back to what we said before, it just kind of feels wrong. The whole process was a mess.
Yeah.
And this, it's continuing to prove, you know, every week how messed up the actual ticket sales went.
And I think that one of the things that gets me, you know, me, Manton, I'm kind of like a justice hawk or something. Like I anything that looks like an injustice, it gets my gander up. And the thing I don't like about, another thing I don't like about the whole sold out thing is, for better and for worse, selling a conference out quickly has become a huge kind of PR thing. Like when you say like, oh, Google I/O sold out in 2 hours or whatever.
Right.
And then so for Apple to come in and say, you know, they don't even have to say it. That's another complication. But to have 2 minutes after the tickets go on sale, a sign appear, you know, a graphic appear on the website saying sold out, is sort of playing that PR game, whether they intend to or not. And it feels disingenuous to me if tickets are still actually being transacted 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a lie. I mean, they weren't sold out. Right. So, I mean, it's sending a weird message, but I mean, to their credit, I was actually watching for, are they going to do a press release with a quote from Tim Cook saying, we are so happy that tickets sold out. The enthusiasm from the developer community is, you know, great, blah, blah, blah. It's sold out record time. I was actually kind of watching for that, because that is not something you should be proud about. You shouldn't brag that you screwed up the ticket process so much that tons of people couldn't get tickets that wanted to go. And to their credit, I don't think Apple ever did that. They probably were quietly scrambling to fix the problem and to get people tickets. They never said, we're so excited about how perfectly the ticket sales went.
Right.
But like you said, just having the little sold out, like, graphic design ready to go and stuff, I mean, does convey kind of that image a little bit.
You know, it would change everything for me if they said, maybe this is a lesson for next year, if they just changed the message from sold out to you know, tickets are, you know, closed. Ticket sales are closed, right? That's a, that's a different message. It doesn't play to that PR BS quite as well. But here's an idea. For example, ticket sales are closed, and then just as a fail-safe and as a sort of like way of extending some empathy to potential attendees who didn't get there fast enough, just say tickets are closed in case any other, in case tickets become available, enter your email address here and we'll let you know.
Sure. And then you can have a clear rule like first come, first served, enter your email address, we'll start calling people. And that, again, it's like the secrecy is really frustrating. Like, just be honest.
Yeah.
If it's a mess, just say it was a mess. We're doing our best. We're working every day, calling people, making it right. Just be honest. Like the Tech Talks last year were like this. They opened the Tech Talks off and Tech Talks up. And of course, Tech Talks are great because there's like a little mini WWDC. It's totally free. It's near you or in your city. Everyone wanted to go. We all signed up. They you didn't know if you were going to get a ticket until, like, I guess a few days later. I can't remember how long it took. They would get back to you about whether you got one or not. And they had some criteria like, you have to have a, you know, you have to have a developer account. You have to have an app in the store, similar to what they did with WWDC this year.
Yeah.
But it turns out, as you talk to people, people that went to WWDC didn't get into the Tech Talks. People that didn't get to go to WWDC last year did get in. So there was this kind of pattern. And you know, the rumor, right, is that they basically kind of slanted it to allow people who couldn't go to WWDC to go to the Tech Talks. But they never said that. Like, just say that. If that's the rule, just be clear and honest about it. Say, this is what we're going to do because we want to be fair to people who haven't experienced an Apple conference before. Instead of being all secretive and just kind of, it's real shady, we don't know who's going to get a ticket, it just creates a lot of frustration.
Yeah, I disagree a little bit in the sense that I get Apple's secrecy. I think it's fine. If you're in business, you're, part of your role is to frame the facts in a way that is least embarrassing and most, you know, complimentary of your own actions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't mind if Apple omits the truth, as long as they're not stating mistruths in the, in that pursuit. So saying it's sold out to me is not the right way to go about it. And again, this is all, you know, we could all just say this is all semantics, but they're important semantics. And they are semantics that imply something very concrete and very, the notion of sold out has a very concrete, long-standing connotation to customers. It means there are no more to be bought because everybody, you know, has already bought them. Yeah. And I just think it's a misuse of the term. And it might be cute. It might have a nice little sign that, you know, looks like a shop window that has just sold its last gobstopper. But it's not the truth. So out of stock? That might be true.
Yeah. If you're going to say something, they don't say much.
Right.
And I think they should say a lot more than they are saying. But at least what they do say, it needs to be accurate.
Right. And that's just again, that's something I love this company. And I always balk at them doing anything that could be perceived as gaining an upper hand dishonorably. Mm-hmm. And that's what that stinks a little bit of to me. And the company is good enough. It doesn't need to ever gain the upper hand dishonorably. It doesn't ever need to be inaccurately portrayed as selling out faster than it did. And you could say, oh, well, if all the systems worked correctly, they would have sold out in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's beside the point because 2 weeks later, they were calling people and selling tickets. And the fact is that leads to this situation then where the lie becomes evident, right? Because somebody's going to tell somebody about the story about how they got the ticket when Apple called them 2 weeks later. And then somebody like you, Manton Reese, is going to be saying, wait a minute, I didn't get a call. Wait a minute. Wait, how come who were they calling? Where was mm-hmm. the sign-up list to get called? Oh, I didn't bug somebody at Apple enough, I guess.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So there's this setup for creating a sense of betrayal or second-classness, which is not good. Not good for Apple, I don't think. And I mean, especially when it's an event that is supposed to be all about letting developers know how important developers are to the company.
Right. It sets the wrong tone.
Yeah.
And like we said before, it just, you know, the whole thing's kind of feel sour now. And if they did call me, I'd be like, yeah, I'm okay. I plan to be there. I don't really want to have anything to do with the ticket anymore.
Oh boy. That's saying something too, Manton. I mean, you would not have said that 3 weeks ago.
No, definitely not.
It's not. That's the last thing I could have, probably the last thing you could have imagined thinking and saying to yourself. So anyway, I'm hoping that we'll just, you know, we'll move on from this, but
yeah, it'll be fine. I'm really happy for the people who got tickets, even the ones that got them last minute.
Me too. And especially just let me underscore, I do not bemoan anybody going to this conference. And I'm especially excited for people who have the opportunity this year to go for the very first time. For folks who are kind of newer to our platforms, some of them are getting to go for the first time, and that's a cool experience, and they will have that. And frankly, at this point, you can't count on having that again. So mm-hmm. it's lucky and exciting for them to get to go. You know, just throwing it out there, Manton, one thing I might propose is to just say only first-timers can go from now on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a sense, that's as fair as anything else, right?
Yeah, I used to think they should lean things to people who have gone before, but I've completely switched from that. I agree. If you can only let certain people go, it should be people who have not been before or have only been a couple times. Because yeah. It's just that, I mean, yeah, the people that are new to the platform or new to the conference, I think Frank will just get a lot more out of it.
Yeah,
I get a bunch out of it. I love to go, but I do think I've been a bunch of times, and it'd be more fair for other folks to get a chance to experience it.
Well, we are excited to have back as our sponsors again this week, Crashlytics. And Crashlytics is a crash reporting framework for iOS. You just drop a library from Crashlytics right in your Xcode project, and when you build and distribute your app, it will automatically send crash reports up to Crashlytics, where you can browse them with a great crash log analyzer. You look at it and it shows you the frequency of particular crashes. You drill down and you can look at a crash and see the stack frames from the crash, give you a great idea exactly what went wrong, and hopefully give you the tools you need to go in and fix the bugs.
Yeah, so as I've mentioned, I've been using Crashlytics for a while, and a couple weeks ago, I did a new version of Tweet Library, and so I shipped it. And a few days later, one of the first things I did is I went into Crashlytics on the website, and I filtered the crashes by the release I just done. So, like, show me the crashes that have come in since I did the release. So, in other words, bugs I missed. And there were a few. And so I did a 2.3.1 bug fix update to Tweet Library and just tried to go down and kill as many of those bugs as possible. And then now I can go back in. I can say, Nat, show me the new bugs since this version, and see if there's anything else I missed.
Hopefully not more than there were before, right?
No, definitely not. No, I made a point. I really tried to, it's hard sometimes to make time to actually fix bugs. And I don't do it as much as I should, especially bugs that I've never seen myself, you know,
right.
Like I know there's other people, it's crashing for other people, but I personally haven't seen it. So it's great sometimes to just go in and say, okay, here are a couple crashes that are happening. I'm going to look at in the log and try to reproduce it, try to find out where the bug is, and make some time to actually get that stuff fixed. Feels really good to do that. And then also watch later that, that crash, you know, is not coming in anymore. I nailed it.
Yeah, I think one of the secret sauce aspects of Crashlytics is that they took something that sounds like a really... And it sounds like and is a really like kind of like nerdy, like low level, you know, how the nuts and bolts of your operation, the crashes, and then they put this really nice design on the, you know, the sort of dealing with those crash logs. And I think that's an uncommon sort of like insight to say, I'm going to take this thing that's very technical and put like a really nice, easy to use sort of app around that, really. I mean, their web app is what it is. And I could see how just having that makes it more compelling to actually do the work of going through and reviewing your crashes. So, folks, if you haven't had a chance yet, check out Crashlytics. You can learn more at Crashlytics.com. All right. Well, Manton, it's been a while since we took a listener Q&A. Just as a reminder to folks, if you have questions for us you'd like us to cover on the show, you can email us feedback@coreint.org. And this week, we're going to tackle a question from Kevin Harwood, who asks, with you having a full-time job, lots of side projects, conference speaking appearances, and family, how do you find time to balance it all? What times of the day work best for you to fit these things in? And I think Manton, maybe this was more precisely directed at you, because I think he's implying you have the full-time job in addition to this indie software work and conference appearances and all this side project stuff that you do. So it's a great question, right? The answer might just be, I don't, or I can't, or I give up. But obviously you're making it work on a level that at least looks like it's working from the outside. So do you have any tips for folks like Kevin who might be trying to emulate your multitasking?
Yeah, listening to the way he strings out all those things that I have to do is a little overwhelming. I don't know how I can possibly do it. I mean, a couple things. One, so he mentions full-time job. That's true. I am really lucky, though, that I do work at home all the time, full-time. I don't commute to an office. I don't have a drive. I don't have a, like, absolutely strict 9-to-5, you know. I mean, I've pretty flexible schedule, and I work at home. So that helps a lot. Don't spend a lot of time in the car. Don't spend a lot of time in meetings, you know, that kind of thing. So really lucky to have that. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to make time. I work in the early morning. I try to a little bit. I'm always up with the kids anyway. You know, on the weekends, we do family stuff. We go out, we do whatever. But also Saturday and Sunday morning, we're kind of lazy. We get a slow start. So I'll work on the weekends in the morning a little bit. And as, you know, as time allows. But yeah, it is tough to make time. The thing that helps me is carving out blocks of time that you can focus on one thing instead of trying to switch between five different projects in the same, you know, day or the same hour, or, you know, continually multitasking. That puts a drain on being able to focus. So carving out some time, maybe at night, kids are in bed, you say, okay, I'm going to work from 9 to midnight on one thing, right? And I'm going to get it done.
Right.
That tends to help me. If I'm distracted, I'm checking email and Twitter, app.net, other things, fixing five different bugs at once, I tend to just kind of spin my wheels and not get anything significant done.
And I think part of that could be like, obviously, you know, he mentioned family. That's a big part of the time juggling. And if you happen to be single with no spouse and no kids, then it's a lot easier to squeeze in indie project time, you know, after work at nights and on weekends.
Sure.
One of the things I think that can help also for sort of making some time, like you said, you might work from 9 to midnight when, you know, you might carve out that time. Well, for a lot of folks, you're probably thinking, that would be nice, but that's sort of like my time that I usually watch TV with my spouse, or you know, for some folks, it's like just getting to bed early, I guess, anticipating an early wake up. One of the things I've found sometimes works for that is if I sort of coordinate with my wife, like, oh, I know you have some projects you want to work on as well. I have some projects I want to work on as well. So let's just make this night, you know, a projects night. And then that sort of helps that process of carving out some time, as, because otherwise it could kind of feel like you're taking time away from your spouse or something. right? If you're right. just like, if you're just like, oh, well, I, you know, you can't do it every, unless your spouse has, is always like busy themselves every night, then you can't just say, I'm going to work on my projects every night.
Yeah.
Unless they don't like you.
Yeah. It's really hard. Like you said, you don't want to neglect your family and you don't want to, I mean, you don't want to work all the time. Right. And this, yeah. you know, we both probably work too much, but over time we should be trying to work less and not all the time. We don't want to have to fill every second of the day at the computer. And I think this is a challenge for a lot of people, not just people that have too many jobs, but just anyone who's plugged in and always at their iPhone or always at their computer.
Yep.
You know, trying to make time to unplug and not do it. So yeah, it's tough. What I keep coming back to is just find a block of time that you can work in, and it doesn't have to be the same every week or the same every day, but find a block of time that does work and focus on one thing and get it done. Last week or a week and a half ago, I had some stuff for Search Path, some JavaScript improvements that I've been putting off that I needed to do. And it was a small thing, right? It's like make the JavaScript better, fix some animation or some positioning that customers had reported. It wasn't a big task, but just taking time and saying, I'm going to do this. I'm going to fix this one thing. It's fairly minor, but I can do it and I can roll it out to customers right away because it's a web app. I can get feedback on it. And it made a significant improvement to the design and just the usability of the app. Probably didn't take more than a few hours, you know, when I actually sat down to do it.
Right. The sort of the counterpart to that approach, I do that a lot too, but then I sometimes sort of regret my attitude being too fixated on a kind of what can I get done, and at the expense of maybe stepping back and looking at the kinds of work that needs to get done over the long haul, and how can I kind of rejigger my whole approach to make more of those things get done in the long run. So in other words, it can be tempting sometimes to say, I've got 3 hours, I'm going to fix this JavaScript issue on the server. But sometimes I only discover in retrospect, looking back, that I've fixed 10 3-hour bugs that would have been addressed with one stepping back, high level, 10-hour mm-hmm. project, let's say. I think, you know, sort of as another sort of side answer to Kevin's question is, as software engineers, as thinking people, as problem solvers, and especially as ambitious people who want to have more projects than we necessarily have time for, I think one of the challenges we have to take on is, how can we sort of beat the system? How can we squeeze more time out of the day by finding efficiencies that make it so that we get more done somehow? And maybe that means that you come up with a clever templating system for your website that makes it so you can update things much quicker than you would ordinarily do. Or maybe it means you come up with a clever programming construct that means that you can come up with changes to your software faster than you would have expected. I think that's something to kind of keep in mind, because if you view, it's good advice for anybody who's a software engineer, but if in particular when you're trying to do your own stuff and trying to squeeze it in to the limited time, you got to be careful not to treat software design and engineering as a sort of like, it's not like a coal mine that you go into and you just smash the walls with a pickaxe for, you know, however many hours it is that you want coal.
Right.
And thinking about what the outcome is and how you can cleverly get there is, I think, part of the challenge and something that has to be taken into consideration to sort of make it all work.
Yeah, I agree. And in part of when I'm talking about focus, that might not just be like the example I used with like, you know, a small problem, focusing on it for a small amount of time and knocking it out, but also just focusing on kind of one product at a time. If you have a couple products, I have too many products at the moment. So I can definitely kind of relate to the problem of switching But there was a really good point Gus Mueller made on a podcast recently. I think it was on the iDeveloper Live, the Mac software business thing that they've done a few times. A little roundtable talking about experience, you know, being an indie developer. And he was talking about how he tries to focus on one product for like 3 months or 6 months, or, you know, instead of having to switch back and forth, focus a large, you know, time span on one thing. So you can step back and see the big picture and make the big kind of architectural changes or design changes that you need to move the product forward. And I really like that.
Yeah.
Approach as well. I mean, it's hard because you know, with any of these things come up, and, you know, an emergency bug fixes on another product, or, you know, you have a day job and you got to travel and there's a bunch of meetings and you're more busy than normal or whatever. Things right. come up. You know, like he mentioned, Kevin mentioned in the question, speaking, that was a really hard thing for me. Cause like, speaking at a conference, and there are other things like this that have these hard deadlines where you can't just say, okay, I'm going to be a little late. I'm going to ship a little later. I'm going to postpone the release, or, you know, I'm going to, you know, whatever. It's a hard deadline. You have to meet it. And so you kind of have to drop everything to meet it and do a good job. And so when I was preparing for NS Conference and CocoConf in Dallas, I had basically dropped it. I dropped support email for a week. I dropped everything so I could do that one thing. And so it's just a reminder to me that, yes, what he said in that question is true. I am spread a little too thin, and anything I can do to try to simplify the projects I work on and make the right time for them is really helpful.
Yeah, I just add one last thing, which is sort of advice for myself that I'm saying out loud so that I will heed it.
Remember.
Which is that it can be very tempting, you know, going back to that, like, mistake of viewing this like a coal mine that you just put X hours in and get X result. It can be very tempting to sort of steal from other resources, or you know, from the time resources that you have been allotting to other things like sleep or recreation, you know, whatever it is you do to sort of chill out. And I have to kind of constantly remind myself that, you know, if I've got a 6 hour block, then working that 6 hours straight, I'm probably not going to get as much done as if I work for 2 hours, take an hour break and go do something refreshing, and then mm-hmm. work another 3 hours. I'm terrible at taking this advice, yeah. but I just want to try to drive that home, because most of us would do crap work when we rob ourselves of sleep and mm-hmm. diversity of activities. And, you know, I honestly do believe that if you left your office in the middle of the day and you went to the museum for an hour and you came back, you'd probably be a better programmer.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. and it's really hard to take that advice when you're just looking at this list of bugs and saying, I know if I just put another 3 hours into this, I'll have three more bugs fixed.
Yeah. And what you said also about like thinking about the big picture of projects, a lot of times the only way to do that is to step away from the computer, go exercise, go do something with family, do something else just to get your mind kind of shifted. And then when you come back, or maybe while you're even gone, you don't want to think about work 24/7, but a lot of times, you know, yeah. you'll unlock the problem that you are struggling with when you're away from the computer.
Yep.
Just kind of randomly. So that's a great question. Thanks, Kevin, for letting us talk about this. I talked about this briefly with him at CocoConf in Dallas, and so I'm glad we had a chance to talk about more on the show.
And as we said, folks, if you have your own questions, drop us a line, feedback@coreint.org. Manton, I think we ought to wrap this one up.
All right, good. Well, thanks everyone for listening.
All right, see you next week, Manton.
Bye.